Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the Liberty Squadron Podcast. I am Andrew Lewinsky, and this week I am joined with Jonathan Lee.
Hello everyone.
Marshall Staggs.
Aloha.
Whoa, he's back from honeymoon.
He is.
Awkward silence. And Chris Apple.
Hey everybody.
All right, this is our PAX Unplugged preview. Welcome to Philadelphia. We hope you enjoy your stay, eat plenty of cheesesteaks, get in a fight with Gritty, and don't have a battery thrown at you or something.
Yeah, just try not to get a battery thrown at you.
Yeah,
it's weird that we're famous for that.
Yes, so just be nice to everyone. We'll be nice to you back. We're super helpful. We're going to have some giveaways at the end of the episode. We want everyone to come out and introduce yourself to us, so we have some fun stuff for you guys. But yeah, this week we have some news. We had holy crap, we had 4 or 5 different national tournaments, a system open since we've last recorded. So we might as well dive right into them. We have the Polish system open. We're not going to go into every list. You've probably heard it all. If you really want to research it, all the information is available through List Fortress, Minox, all that stuff. But we did want to go into a few of them. The first thing we're going to look at is the winning list at the Polish System Open. It is Lando Calrissian in the modified, or is, I'm sorry, the scum Lando Calrissian with Trickshot, the title, Boba Fett with Debris Gambit, Triple Zero, Marauder, Han Solo, Pelob with the title, and Debris Gambit. I'm really liking Debris Gambit on Pelob. I've been running that for a little bit, and I think it's like the way to go on him, and I think some people are missing it.
I mean, it seems good on paper. Like, if you have 2 focus tokens, like, what else do you really need?
I mean, you got a target lock
if you want it, but...
But I think at this point, people are really gunning for Pelob.
There's so many phantoms in the meta, though. It's like, the couple times I've used it, I feel like I'm stealing evades.
Yeah.
But it is real good.
That's something to consider, yeah.
Right, but I mean, you're also probably going up against... It does feel bad when you go up against another Pelob that doesn't have Debris Gambit, and, you know, then they steal your evade token, so maybe that's the best to target lock in that instance. But
I think it is an option. I wouldn't write it off. It's something I would consider if I had an EPT that if I had the space for an EPT on Pelob.
It's excellent. Yeah, I mean, and at that price range, like, you're making point decisions at 2 to 3 points. You're thinking Debris Gambit, or you're thinking Engine Upgrade, or, you know, Triple Zero, right?
So, oh, sure, yeah.
They're all, you know, occasionally you have just points left over, and it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. I think the real hidden gem here is Lando. Like, he's 11 hold, or 11 HP to get through, and he's just kind of... He can dish out damage when he needs it. So he's getting that extra die when your ships are stressed, and ships are a lot of, you know, stress from doing the linked actions and everything like that. So I think he is a little hidden gem right here. And it's a lot of hold to chew through. So it's kind of like you ignore him, and it might not be the right... Well, you got to kill Pelob in this list first. Like, that's what you have to do. But then it's kind of like you can't just leave Lando Hag in there or Boba. So everything here is a threat.
Yeah. I mean, it depends so much on your list. Like, whether or not you should kill Boba or his friends. Like, it varies a lot. I'm still of the opinion that almost every variation on these Boba lists is just slightly different than anything else that could have made the top table.
Yeah.
Because you just look at how much is in the cut. Like, it's really hard to read it. It's good to see that, like, the Scum Falcon is there.
Yeah, because it's cool. It's a cool, cool piece.
Yeah, like, I like that. I just, it's hard to read into power level on it. Because, at the same tournaments, you're seeing, like, Boba Gurry still crop up. And it tells you everything you need to know about that archetype still.
Right. The runner-up was a Boba Gurry.
Yeah.
And it's, like, I still am of the opinion that that's legitimately just a product of our meta, of like the ship count being low, so you can kind of get away with it.
Yeah. All right. So Australian Nationals, we had Whisper Soontir Redline versus Kagi, Carl, Sabak, and Whisper. Very Imperial based. Chris, you were saying that Australia has a very deep Imperial fandom.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're real serious about aces, and always kind of have been. And I like just watching some of those games was really fun. I'm a big fan of this KG Sloan list. It's really interesting to see the way that he was using Sabak as kind of a way to slow down KG and keep things on target. And then you get a full Whisper out there. It's a cool list. It messes with all those red lines that everybody's taking to tournaments these days. So you can put KG in more than just that list. Like, there's Whisper Redline KG. There's all kinds of different stuff, and yeah, it really does turn the tables on that matchup.
Whisper Soon Tier KG is super interesting.
Yeah, that's out there. It is worth pausing on Sloan again. Like, this archetype of the Lambda with Whisper is very different than the playstyle you'll get from a Redline centered list. It's something that, people just, I think, are starting to explore. You're seeing it here, right? Like, this is a really well-optimized Sloan list.
Yeah.
Which is, more than just the masses of, low PS generics that we've seen in the past.
Right. And, all right, so touching base on Sloan, I had this conversation with a friend that they aren't very high on Sloan because it's kind of like, well, you have to be losing ships to actually be triggering Sloan, and that's not the case. You don't realize how many times someone might be stressed that, they're not even going to realize that they're stressed, and then you're just like, okay, Sloan gets the rerolls here. And I think people are missing that.
It's a lot, right? You are going to lose a ship eventually, right? So it's just about how you lose that ship. And mm-hmm. it gives you a ton of information about how your opponent's going to approach the game.
Right.
So if you use that properly, there's sort of like an unspoken advantage there. If you don't, then you can kind of get into situations where you lose Sloan very early. You have a bad list against a good list.
Yeah.
Cool. So going into French Nationals, we have Whisper, Soon Tier, Redline. We had Whisper, Deathrain, Redline. Deathrain's an interesting choice. It's a little bit different, but it's still pretty good. All these Punishers are just like very competitive, and I think everyone, like, Redline is obviously the best one, but it's still, you can throw any of these on here and get results.
What I'm interested by is, like, the Advanced Sensors Redline caught on and became dominant Redline very quickly,
right?
Like, almost within a week and a half. This variant with Deathrain, we've seen in a lot of European tournaments, I think. It punches harder early, and its end game is not as great. But yeah, it's still really, really good and better than most three ship lists. It's just it's slightly different feel than Soon Tier, and you don't get that bid, which is such a problem.
Yeah, still pretty good. So then we go into Mexican Nationals, and look at this: Fen, Wedge, Dutch, and a Bandit.
What is this list?
So yeah, we got Fen is back. Well, I'm not saying back, but he's, won something. I'm super low on Fen, but he did have the EPT that boosts you up to 7 or 6 with him.
Why are you low on Fen?
I think he costs too much. They definitely increased his points since first edition, but I think he's too many points to what he. Okay, so let me rephrase this. He's not what he used to be in first edition because of the points.
But he's
comparable cost, though. He's 52 points base. I mean, he's not.
He's like 20 first edition points.
Yeah, right. What was he in first edition? He's like 26 base.
No, he's like 20 or so.
Oh, he was that
champion. Yeah, so I mean, if he went up 6 points first edition, and I think, I don't know.
My thoughts on Fen are pretty simple, where it's like, he's basically unchanged from 1.0, right? He's extremely good coordinate I6, but he's not valuable when there's a lot of ships on the table, right? Or he's less valuable. So it's a really similar thing that we're seeing with a lot of these other lists, where against a three ship list, if you shut down one of those three things, that however many points it is to buy that is suddenly a lot better. It just makes a significant difference in terms of like what your matchups are looking like. Versus, you know, we look at it on the table. It's like, oh, I could, what can I get instead from a rebel list versus Fent? Because I'm not going to get the offensive output. Wedge? Like, that price point is so awkward for rebels, I feel like. There's not a lot there.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, this list, it's just a variation on, like, rebel, torpedo, alpha strike, swarm tactics. Because on Dutch, he has the R3 astromech, proton torpedoes, some other things. So I think the idea is Fenn, he coordinates Dutch a target lock at I6. Dutch gets two target locks. He passes one to Wedge. Wedge, who already focused. Dutch, who focused previously. So you get the two I6 double-modded proton torps.
Yeah. Which is that swarm tactics interaction that we're seeing is all over the place too, right? So it's something that it's not, you know, Fenn happens to be in this list, but there's a bunch of other rebel lists that we've seen recently perform fairly well with kind of doing that.
So okay, recapping all these nationals and system opens, if you remember back at the end of first edition, like, it was just regionals, like, if all the podcasts going over, you know, regional lists, is Whisper now like the new NIM? Like, would you say in the current state of the game? I'm not saying how easy he is to fly.
Whisper is moderately difficult to fly, and of the three ships in that list, he is not the problem.
Well, he's under-costed, probably, right? I mean, that I could say,
yeah.
But it's really hard to draw parallels to Nim, because
right. I'm not trying to say that like he's the powerhouse that Nim was before, but at the same time, it's kind of like you're always seeing Whisper always in these top cuts, like no matter what, you just see Whisper, 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 and again, I mean, it was Nim Miranda or Miranda in general back when first edition was dying, and it was kind of like. Or is Whisper Redline like that combination now?
So are you making the are you asking whether or not he's meta warping? Because I feel like Nim, the problem with Nim was that he was so prevalent and his whatever he had going on was so ridiculous that it shaped the entire meta. And I'm not sure that's the case with Whisper.
I think what I'm asking is, do you think people are tired of hearing that Whisper is in the top? Because it was kind of like, you're like, okay, Nim won. Great. We know he's good. Now it's kind of like, we're seeing Whisper in all these spots. Do you think that the state of the game, this could be, granted, I understand we're probably getting a points increase on Whisper in January, but it's kind of like you are seeing Whisper all down this list.
So here's my thought on that. Like, Whisper's a problem for the game, absolutely. It has the same problem that a lot of the other kind of ships that are on the watch list have, which is the easy access to a second token on one side of the dice that potentially modifies the other, right? Like, that's, and it does something that the vast majority of the card pool can't, which is to get a free token. And that is definitely warping to the meta, but it's no more warping in my mind than the rest of the ships that fall into that bucket.
Yeah.
They just so happen that most of those ships are also I5. So you get that kind of interaction. Not that that's ever going to go away, really. I don't think. But there's an argument to be made that, you know, the crew slot is maybe incorrectly placed on the Phantom. That maybe should be a gunner slot
long-term.
Yeah. I've heard that, yeah.
You know, the reason being is that some ships, the more expensive you make them, the better they get. And Whisper is certainly, you know, in that category of... If you give me more points in my Whisper and I have some other thing that increases in power level that I can put next to it, I don't know. You just, your win conditions improve.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Andrew, I'm with you. I don't think that people are quite sick of it yet, though, because it's not as... There's components to it that are feels bad, man, for sure. Like, the Vader crew interaction is abusive.
Right, so maybe comparing it to Nim was the bad, because I mean Nim was a super easy ship to fly when he had TLC on him, and it was just kind of like especially before they nerfed Genius. Like, he could just do oppressive things. But it's kind of like you do see Whisper, like, in this top everywhere. Like, granted, he's probably the most brought ship for a reason, obviously, but it's almost like...
I would compare him to, like, first edition Palpatine. Like, he's always around. He's always making cuts. He's not, like, so good that it's oppressive and, like, it's pushing everything else out. But it's a constant thing that you have to think about and plan around.
Yeah.
Maybe that's annoying for some people. I don't know. But
no, yeah. So it's less about, like, there's always going to be a list that's going to be, you know, the core of a faction, or a couple ships are going to be the core of a faction, no matter how much they try to make things diverse. To Andrew's point, though, Whisper's absolutely oppressive right now, because there's just, it's like I was saying before, there's, you got to look at the whole card pool, and it does things that most ships can't at a price point that is not too far off of most other ships in the game at that initiative.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's, I don't think that, I don't think that those will stay at the same cost. But I'm also not expecting them to change mechanically very much. You'll just see Collision Detector maybe, and Vader Crew, you know, lose some of their, you know, availability, I think.
Right. Cool. All right, let's move on. We have the Mining Tie, the Mining Guild Tie article drop. So it looks like second edition is right around the corner. We're getting different reports. It looks like, what was that?
You mean the next wave?
Yes, the wave two. It looks like the
as of today, wave two has moved to shipping.
Right. So
we'll get it in a couple weeks.
So it's usually 2 weeks. So it looks like December 13th. UK keeps saying it's going to be Friday. I can't see that happening unless, you know, there was a major communication error, which is possible with the dropping of Keyforge. You always see them kind of like divert all the resources and communication from one game to the other. So, but it looks more like it's going to be December 13th for Wave 2. And this is the Scum edition to the Wave.
Hey, so question for you guys. Uh-huh. Which conversion kit are you buying first? Resistance or First Order?
Resistance.
I'm getting them both.
Yeah, I'm getting them both. I already... have them reserved.
All right, so which one are you going to open first? Oh,
okay. I think we're
going to resistance.
I think I'm going to open First Order.
There,
see,
you go.
My problem is that I only have like four First Order ships.
Time out. Is this a trick question? Because I'm opening the Mining Guild Tie first.
No, you're not.
I mean, I play Scum, and that's what I do. So I'm going to like dissect this thing as much as I can.
I don't know about this thing. Well, okay, so let's talk about it.
Okay, yes. It's a TIE fighter.
I'm very meh on it.
Welcome to the party. It's official that every faction that is currently available has a TIE fighter. But it looks okay. It's got some crazy mechanics where, you know, they can move over asteroids. It looks like a couple of them can do tractor beams, or one of them can do tractor beams. They have like different mechanics that aren't like necessarily in the game, or not in the game, but they're just different in general. So like Foreman,
scummy.
Yes, very scummy. Like that's the best way to describe it. Is before you engage, this is Foreman approach. Before you engage, you may choose one enemy ship in your bullseye arc at range 1 to 2 and gain one disarm token. If you do, that ship gains one tractor token. That seems like
it could be really good, like once a tournament. Like it could really save your bacon in like a very specific situation.
Right. Like you see something at the edge of the board and be like, okay, I can tractor beam this guy in my bullseye arc, and I know he's gonna fly off the board next turn, but
it's really conditional.
I mean, if this thing's gonna be more points than the quad jumper at 28 points, and it's not looking like it's going to hit tables. Like the quad jumper is just better overall. Okay. So I should stop myself here though. if hyperspace format comes out and this thing is a way to tractor beam and quad jumpers aren't out there, maybe it will see some play.
I think it maybe, like, to your point, it gives a little bit of a clue as to the price point. Because it given that pilot ability, I think it, or even, maybe it just means quad jumpers are going up.
Maybe. Well, like I said, I think they're really trying to put, after this next wave comes out, I think they're really going to start pushing the hyperspace to where I'm at.
What were you going to say, Jonathan?
The Imperial TIE fighters, all the I-4 Inferno squadrons are all, aren't they all 30 points except for Iden?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. They are. They're in that range, which is why, like, clearly the quad jumpers, you know,
and this gotta thing, be around that. This thing has a slightly worse dial, but it has that ship ability. So let's talk about the ship ability.
So, all right, yeah, you can take this.
Yeah, so the ship ability is notch stabilizers, and it reads, while you move, you ignore asteroids. So my understanding is that it's specifically asteroids, not debris clouds.
Correct.
Or whatever the new, those weird red goofy things are that are in the,
yeah,
that the, people are theorizing are new obstacles. So this will only be rocks.
Which makes sense thematically.
Yeah, because I've never seen Rebels, but I guess these guys are zooming around asteroid fields or whatever. So I feel like that ability is really good. And I wonder if just by dint of that ability, these guys are going to be... So, Jonathan, you said that the I-4s are 30. Are these going to be like 35 points? Are they going to be 38 points? Like, how good is that ship ability? Because I feel like it's pretty good.
So they show a Mining Guild Surveyor, right? A generic at I-2.
Yeah.
So like the dream has always been to run a TIE swarm, right? And just fly it over rocks and not get made fun of.
Oh, sure.
Right.
I don't think that's going to, I'm not, first of all, I'm not a huge fan of mechanics that play with that.
Like, yeah. That was going to be my next point. Like, stuff that ignores obstacles. I say this as a former Dash addict from 1.0, like shit that ignores obstacles is really abusive and stupid and kind of like defeats one of the major challenges of the game, which is navigating around the obstacles on the table. But
maybe that'll drive the cost of this up to a point where it's in an awkward spot.
You know? Like you wouldn't swarm them. Like maybe you can get, if you take like six, you can get like six generics and maybe that's it.
Maybe.
The
fact that we're getting it, or we get a initiative 2 and an initiative 1, I got a feeling that they're going to be cheap. Maybe a little bit more than TIE fighters, but I can't see them being that much more. They're still TIE fighters.
They lose the 4K and the 5 straight is red.
Right. I think that's the only
so
thing.
So the dial is like a little worse.
Except but I, you can fly no
yeah,
like who cares, right?
I have no idea. You can't land on a rock though. Like sometimes,
is that true?
Yeah, you can. You can land on it, but you have to barrel roll off.
You won't be able to shoot. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to barrel roll off of it.
If you're Foreman Proach or whatever his name is, you land on a rock and you do whatever and your ability still triggers. So maybe you don't care.
Right.
Yeah.
And because you gain a disarm token, so you're not shooting anyway.
Right. It's not like these things are going to break the game. It's
No.
It's just a weird design direction that FFG sort of embraced.
Man. What was the one separatist that it can like crawl onto rocks that we saw? What if like these things are just going to be fighting over that?
The
so I was yeah. so I was in Hawaii when I was in Hawaii when the that article dropped. So I was like 6 hours behind you guys, and I open up my phone in the morning, and I'm like, "What is going on? Like, this is madness." And I couldn't like figure out exactly what it was, but it lets you like land on rocks or something. Is that what it is?
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's something that you can kind of like pivot on rocks. Jonathan,
it's a double-sided configuration card.
Okay.
And it's like if it's open and you're on a rock and you reveal anything other than a two straight, you can rotate.
Okay, and that's for the vulture droids, right?
Yeah, and then if you did reveal a two straight, you fly off, right?
What we don't know is...
Flip the card. And then you flip the card and it says something else on the other side.
Yeah, we don't know the other side. So yeah, like what I'm hoping for, I said this last week, is like I'm really hoping that the other side of that gives you a strong incentive not to do that.
Right.
Mm.
Oh, like after you take off, you can't hop from like rock to rock. You have to like Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. Yeah.
I'm 100% hoping that this turns into tower defense.
you really only play X-Wings to build forts, right?
Yeah. I mean, we'll turn this into balloons. We got this. Okay, we got Captain Seaver. While you defend or perform an attack before attack dice are rolled, if you are not in the enemy ship's bullseye arc, you may spend one charge token. If you do, the enemy ship gains one jam token. I think this is pretty good. This might be the best one.
I agree.
Low effort, right? Super low effort.
Yeah. Jonathan, do you have something?
I think he was previously spoiled.
Yeah, he was previously spoiled. Yeah,
I think we've talked about him before.
We probably have.
He seems familiar. Yeah.
So go ahead, John.
Would he find a good role in an Adreia swarm or with other lower initiative ships shooting after him after you strip a defensive token off of Whisper or someone?
Yeah, you know what I just thought about?
Alob, and then nobody gets tokens. He's like a cheaper Tarok. Like, get rid of Tarok, put this guy in.
It's building that toolkit of like scum control, we saw Cavil, Forlom, Palob, and a jumper, right? Over in England.
Mm-hmm. And
that list, like if you haven't played against the game, there's a turn where three ships could potentially their control trick.
Yeah. All right, so
and it's a big deal. Like, so I think there's just the amount of flexibility that Scum has to do stuff like that. It's pretty unique.
Hear me out. What if there was this large turret based ship that was shooting at this thing twice and got two jam tokens? I mean, I'm not going to say what ship it is, but it would be a good little defense against it.
Yeah.
that is so stupid.
I'm just saying, you could break a lock and maybe strip one of its tokens. I don't know.
But well, so which do lock your rocks, right? Like if you miss a lock and the range, like definitely lock onto the rocks that are around as jam tokens become more popular.
Okay. I like Seaver.
You could get to decide. Yeah.
Yeah, you get to
the victim decides. Okay.
Wait, what?
No, the person
when jamming.
You get jammed. Oh, I thought it was the jammy.
No, the person jamming gets to choose if it's a green token or a lock.
Oh. Okay.
So
I literally have not seen Jam at all in 2.0. So
I'm disappointed.
I thought
Palop can jam. It's a red jam.
It's on there. I've never done it. I've flown him like 20 times. I've never done it.
I've seen people do it to great effect on stream. Like they strip off that target lock so that, Redline or whoever can't fire ordnance.
I should really start doing that.
Well, you see it from the Lambda. Occasionally too, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing about Jam was that it got stripped from range 2 and arc 2, just range 1 in general. But I think it's still very strong, and I think that this ability is very good. We're going to go, what was it? I don't even know how to want to pronounce this. Ahav, maybe?
Yeah,
but, that's not, but sure. Okay, sure. Ahav. While you defend or perform a primary or perform an attack, if the enemy ship is a larger size than you, roll one additional die. So it's kind of like, it's pretty cool that now we have three different size ships, and that these things, I would say Seaver even kind of goes along that lines, because a lot of the larger base ships are turrets, and you're not going to be in its bullseye arc, but it's kind of like these things do generally take advantage of larger base stuff, especially with this guy.
This guy is like Scum Blount a little bit.
Yeah.
You just throw him in and he's sometimes he's way more potent than you would think.
We keep getting TIE fighters with three dice. It's like,
they really want like a lot of TIE fighters to have three dice. It's kind of funny.
It's making them, I guess, relevant still.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say we're starting to see that creep back up to, I mean, two dice definitely still hurt, but I think we're starting to see that creep that, you know, three dice is just the way to go now with a lot of things. But yeah, so overall, I think this mining guild tie, it's very scummy. They do crazy tricks. Even in the spread, it has static discharge vanes, which is crazy with the control and trick shot with them moving over the rocks. It feels very thematic.
Oh, hey, just a quick thing we caught there. So you have to spend a charge to do it, right? So dash gets around it.
Right. Touché.
Wait, so why does this thing have static discharge vanes? Is there something that interacts with Ion, or like you getting a jam token?
So we haven't seen Dace Bone Arm become useful. Maybe this is going to be the expansion that does that.
That like introduces static discharge vanes into the second edition.
Yeah, because doesn't he mess with ions and stuff? But there's really no way to do that right now.
I mean, we already have static discharge vanes, so.
Yeah, no, I know, but
it's just kind of like, yeah, why would, what are we missing out of this that they would put that in the spread?
Some other ion related card, possibly,
or jam. Yeah, I don't get it. So yeah, overall, what do you guys think? I'm other than putting, I don't know, four of these on the table with Dre or something else. Like, I don't, they're going to be fun, but.
If these guys are costed similarly to Imperial TIE fighters, like, I think they're fine. If they're significantly more expensive, it's a hard pass for me. I don't
know. So, like, Ahav is really good filler.
Yeah, like, that's really true. Good, yeah.
And then Fever is, I don't want to say I'm concerned about Scum Control, but, like, it's definitely a direction that it's going.
Well, I think it's fine for a faction in the game to be the blue deck. Like, I think,
yeah,
because I think most games have that feature built into it, but
right, they just need, it's something they have to very carefully balance,
right? Which FFG is like notoriously bad at. So.
Well, in this case, it is a TIE fighter, so you know, it's not like a quad jumper. I can shoot it and it'll die,
yeah,
right. And then it's gone. It's not part of the game anymore. So, yeah, it's neat. I mean, I think it'll definitely, Seaver and Ahav will definitely see play at minimum. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and like I said, I think that generics, if they're priced accordingly, they'll start seeing these scum swarms pop up. So
at minimum, the art looks cool, right? And they're going to look pretty badass on the table.
Again, I'm still, I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I mean, if these are legal in hyperspace because they're new and they want to push new products into the hyperspace format, they could start seeing a lot of play just based on what we have for the other actual availabilities of it. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that. All right, let's move on to PAX Unplugged. So this weekend, it starts the 30th and goes to the 2nd. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it is the first second edition system open. It's like actually the first like big system organized play event for second edition and X-Wing 2.0. In the United States. Was that?
In the United States.
In the United States, correct. Yeah, I'm sorry. Poland had theirs last week, so, and obviously the Nationals, but the first official system open in the United States is this weekend. Friday is the first day one to it. So it's a Friday day one with a cut to Saturday. And then the extended qualifier, I believe is what they're calling it for the time being, is on Saturday, which you have to go 6-0 to get a world's invite or top 8 in the day one event to get the world's invite. We've started digging up some research on everything. So you're coming to PAX first thing you got to do is actually get there. It's at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. Registration looks like it's going to open around 9 a.m. It looks like doors to the actual place open at 8. And then it says it's a 10 a.m. start time, but we all know that these things start super late, especially with how it went last year. But we won't get into that. So you're getting there, and there's three different entrances to PAX. So all the tabletop and miniatures like tournaments are happening downstairs this year, as opposed to the main hall like it did last year. The entrance that you want to go to is at 11th and Arch. So if you go in there, it's a quick little process. They'll check your badge and then go through the metal detector, and you will be good. I would suggest getting there early if you have never been there before and just, you know, checking out the place. PAX was like a blast last year, so I'm glad to say that they're making this like a recurring thing every year. So that's to get in. Jonathan, do you know a bit about Best Coast Pairings? You want to go over that?
Yeah, so the system opens will be using this app called Best Coast Pairings. They have apps for your Android or iOS device. And basically, you create an account using the same email that you use to register for PAX. And it'll do things like it knows your GPS coordinates. So when you arrive on site, it can actually check you in. You can submit your list there. They'll be doing all the pairings via this app, and you'll be entering your scores in on the app. And they did say that if you don't have a phone, they'll be able to accommodate you. But in a match, even to enter in the scores, only one of the players needs a phone.
Right.
So if you don't have a phone and your opponent doesn't have a phone, then you have to have the TO do it for you. But
so when you check in, though, they said that you will have to create a PIN, like a your own PIN number. So you actually, when you put the score in, if you're putting it in on somebody else's phone, you actually have to put your PIN number in to say you agree with the score. So you can't just be like, oh, yeah, that's right. And then they change it real quick on you. So that's how you do enter your score in.
And they can do like push notifications to say, OK, there's 10 minutes left, 5 minutes left, or things like round starts. Rather than just yelling it, they said they can do push notifications. You can see rankings at any time. You can look at other people. You can look at people's lists if they're submitted there. One of the owners has done a couple of interviews on other podcasts, and they have a lot of experience. They've done many, many different other events for other games. So right. I think it should. And then they will be here on site. The actual owner is going to be, or developer, one of them will at least be on site.
I think he said that. Yeah, they'd use this for the Las Vegas Open for Warhammer, and I think they said they had 800 players, so they know what they're doing. So if they could run an 800 person system, or not system open, an 800 person Warhammer tournament, I think they could probably manage this for right now. It looks like they're really pushing this, though, that they understand that people are going to be resistant to it, but they said as soon as you get the hang of this, it's going to be so much better. My one question about it, though, is am I going to be able to like check the time in the round, or am I still going to have to scream judge like every 5 seconds to see how much time in the round? I don't think they've answered that anywhere.
That would be above and beyond if they could get the clock in the app. That would be super cool.
They can do notifications for how much time is left.
Oh, how much time is left? Okay.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay.
Do you still need to print your list?
No. I'm probably going to bring.
Yeah. Printouts. How is that going to work? What do we do? How do we submit our list?
Jonathan, did you hear about this?
I don't know exactly how you submit your list. But,
so from what I. Don't quote me on this because, it could have been wrong. I know last time when he was on Gold Squadron, he did mention that you can export out of the actual squad builder. And I know they were trying to work out on actually doing it through YASB, that you could just put it all into YASB and then export it out of YASB into this app and submit it that way. So the last time they interviewed him, he was not sure, or he said it was not ready yet, but they were hoping to have it ready by PAX Unplugged. So keep an eye out for that. You can definitely do it through the squad builder, the actual FFG squad builder. I know you grind through it, actually, have to use the FFG squad builder for once and put your list in. I would still recommend bringing printouts over your list because it is very helpful for yourself and, you know, to explain it to your opponent.
Sure.
And hopefully they do the same for you. So,
hey, one random question.
Yeah.
So from the second edition tournaments I've been to, the most kind of goofiest part of all of them has been the half point kind of mind games that people have to do.
Right.
So is it legal for me to write down what half points are on my opponent's list before the game starts?
That... No, I don't think you're allowed to take notes anymore.
So no one can do that.
It said in the tournament regulations that you can't take notes unless they changed it, but I don't think anyone would mind.
Yeah,
is that notes though? The game hasn't started, right? Like before the game, you write down what half points are.
I mean, okay, so this is a gripe that I've been having with the squad builder is that like it is a lot harder. You actually have to ask your opponent how many points are things, and like it seems like it's going to generate problems. What happens?
Like the joke is math is easy, but like every tournament I've been to, it's people right. get so confused.
And here's the thing that you get even like themselves counting up the points and being like, okay, and then it's what's going to happen to that one person that says, oh yeah, this is 85 points, and then you think you're safe, you run away, time's called, and then you're like, oh no, it was actually 90 points. Like,
I mean, that happens a lot. That happened in almost every game at Coruscant.
Yeah.
Like, someone was wrong about points.
You're under no obligation to tell the truth about how much your stuff costs. Like, you can just straight up lie. There's nothing in tournament regulations about that.
How many points is your boba? My boba is 35 points.
Yeah, my boba is like a lean 26 points.
Yeah.
Don't even shoot him. It's not. It's
not so worth it. Not worth it. Yeah, so I'm curious about that. Like, if maybe I'll have to ask a judge call that like this weekend to be like, hey, like, what is the ruling? Like, can I input my opponent's list into the squad builder real quick just to make sure that like everything's legal and everything is like accurate and how many points everything is? Like,
okay, so here's what it says. It says players cannot take notes or reference outside material or information during a tournament round. So what is it? What is a tournament round? Is that while the clock is running?
How do you define outside?
Well, so anything
like outside the building,
anything that's not FFG related. So you could absolutely use the squad builder. I don't know. Like, I guess maybe like taking the notes might have something to do with slow play or something along those lines that you can be like, okay, well, this person's like doing stuff like that, but so let's say I need to look at your list. I could reference FFG materials then, which is the squad builder.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about taking notes during the game. Like, this isn't like, oh, let me just calculate on a piece of paper.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, I can't imagine anyone would actually care if you wrote down the half points.
But that is something that you probably want to take care of before the round starts. Definitely. But yeah, every tournament that I've been to so far, like, that's always been a problem where people forget their points, and understandable, like, you don't know right offhand. But so do yourself the favor, print out your own list, print out a list for the other person, and they have the half points on there for everything. They keep changing on the app though what is half points, if it's rounded up or rounded down. I think they changed it again from what I heard, but check the TO with the tournament rules, what you have to do.
That's right. App, right?
Yes. For who?
Hmm?
Points destroyed rounds up?
Yeah.
Is that okay. Point? Yeah, that's what I thought it was. I wasn't sure it was. Yeah. Okay. Next tip. Who got this? Eat. Take breaks. Okay. I'll take
it. This is, this is super important because if I don't know if you're like me, I get super hangry and I get super, I like my mind, whatever like decision-making ability I have or impulse control, like totally goes out the window when I have to use the bathroom. So like, just do like, take your bio breaks, like bring a protein bar, bring a bag of peanuts or something, like just do what you need to do Because if it was anything like last year, you have to walk like 10 minutes to get to the bathroom. And there's, it's like, it's, you don't want to be in a situation where you're like up against the clock, like trying to run back to make it to the start of the next round. So just like do what you need to do to keep your like body and mind free of biological distractions.
Right. And I know this counters to what you're saying about that, but like drink a lot of water. Like if you become dehydrated, then you're not going to probably think straight. And it's, I think it was Paul Heaver, when his first Worlds win, he wrote that was one of the most important things to do was to hydrate.
So, yeah, it's a real thing. Yep. Your brain needs water. You like, if you're dehydrated, your faculties are compromised, man.
Okay, let's move along. We still got a couple more topics. So we have some expectations of what we're going to see this weekend. Scum, you're absolutely going to see Paylob. You're going to see Boba, Quad Jumpers. Forlorn will probably be around. Cavil is still around. Ulti. You might run into a Dreosaurm. I feel like that's kind of dropped off a little bit, but it's still something to think about that the Dreosaurm is really good. And it should still be around. Like, there's no reason that it fell off other than flying swarms can be hard and stressing.
And we're still seeing it.
Yeah. Chris, you want to take Imperials?
Sure. I mean, this is all really well known at this point, but it'll be a lot of Whisper, a lot of Redline. Make sure you have a plan for how you're going to deal with Redline in particular. And if you see Redline on the table, you're probably going to want to shoot Redline first. In virtually all cases, it's pretty rare that you know you're going to be able to go target the rest of that list and win out. I would say that one of the things that's going to be sort of slightly different from, you know, 3 weeks ago even, is that, as you talked about with the Australian results, there's going to be more Captain KG, and that'll be out there. So if you're someone who is running Redline, be prepared for that as well. I wouldn't say that change your list last minute to deal with it. That wouldn't make any sense, but know that KG's out there and is going to be moving all of your locks. I think Jenden is also another ship that is starting to be looked at just as a way of getting around the initiative bid. So not that it'll be in high volume, but there's definitely people that have looked at Redline and said, man, what if I didn't have 85 points here and just were able to get the lock? I don't think that's the right call, but someone will make it. And then Initiative 6, just to pause on that for a moment, there's so much I-5, and there's a lot of I-5 with, you know, a bid. If you just take two Initiative 6 things, it helps. So I know that Vader hasn't performed very well, but I do expect to see, you know, double I-6 Imperials.
And then, Jonathan, you want to take Rebels?
Sure. I think we'll see a lot of sort of Rebel salad with, like, Wedge, Luke, maybe Jan, Thane, Garvin, stuff like that. A lot of swarm tactics to try to boost your initiative up to 6, you know, swarm tactics Wedge, or like that Mexican Nationals list swarm tactics Fen. I think we'll see a lot of that sort of stuff. Also, you know, back at Minock, Brian Bugage played selfless B-Wings and Biggs. And, you know, I don't imagine a lot of people choosing to play it, but it's just something that, you know, it's sort of traditional Rebel damage mitigation, damage spreading around. So he had two B-Wings with Selfless, Braylon Strom, and Biggs.
That's like the real damage race, like, there. It's kind of like you now have almost like a 30-point one ship coming at you that's just hitting you with 3-4 dice attacks.
One very slow-moving right. Rebel ship, one banking and one straighting towards you.
Exactly.
but I think, and then, you know, something in those Australian lists, there were multiple lists that brought AP5. Yeah. So, like, people trying to find ways to give Wedge or Luke or whoever, like, double mods for, or not that Luke needs it, but, like, Wedge or Dutch or whoever, double mods on their proton torpedoes. So I'd expect, you know, proton torpedoes, swarm tactics, and like 3-4, you know, Rebel ships. And maybe some other Rebel stuff as well.
Yeah. Cool. So on our first episode, I think I introduced Marshall as Marshall-Stag, so he can take this next topic of what we might see at PAX this weekend with this thing that's been literally buzzing all over the internet for the past week, even though it has been out for a little bit, but it really made a mark in the Australian Nationals. So you want to take this?
Yeah. I don't want to break down the whole list, but the important components are, well, you kind of have to break down the whole list.
Explain how it works then.
So the list is Dash Rendar and Rourke Garnett in the Hawk. And essentially what's happening with this list, Dash has Han Gunner, which allows him to take a shot at I-7, but he's allowed to take that shot after Rourke Garnett's ability triggers. So Dash can take two shots out of the same firing arc.
At I-7.
At I-7. So he can throw minimum 6 dice at one target, probably 8 dice, maybe 2 or 3 times a game if trick shot is triggering, because you're putting trick shot on Dash. He's throwing 10 dice at a ship before anything else gets to shoot. So you can take red line off the table. Andrew, as you demonstrated the other night, you can delete old Tarok well, that was just one shot. That was pretty unlucky, but you can take a ship a turn off the board before anything else gets to shoot.
You're looking at 6 damage against something with 2 agility, right? Regularly.
Yeah. And so the reason for that is because with squad leader on Rourke and perceptive co-pilot on Dash Rendar, these are double modded shots. You have a target with Dash, you have a target lock and 2 focus tokens. So you're gonna get 4 results with each of these 2 shots. It showed up at Australian Nationals, and I feel like some people think that the sky is falling.
Not
yet.
I don't know. I don't know what I people are going to take it to PAX.
Yeah.
If you play 6 games at PAX, there's a decent chance that someone who bought into the hype, or someone who a long time ago, I guess, because Chris, you were telling me about how this list has been, this has been under discussion for quite some time at this point.
Longer than the past week and a half where it's really kind of picked up. Right. No one had the guts to actually take it to a major tournament that I'm aware of, or if someone did, it never made cut.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now that it's performed, maybe those people who are thinking about it are going to decide to take it. I'm of two minds about it, because the thing that it does is very powerful. And it can do it reliably, which is an enormous problem. And I think the other part of it that worries me is that it's not difficult to do. It's like a pretty low skill floor to make this work. And I wonder, like, are a bunch of people going to bring it and it's going to like do pretty well in Swiss and then just get demolished in the cut? Or like, my worry is that I'm going to get pushed out of the tournament by running into this once and like not having I do have a plan for it, but you should be concerned about randomly running into this in Swiss and not having a plan for it. Like, now this is something that we all have to think about.
What's your plan?
My plan
it's
is
secret. You can't tell. Natties.
I have
roll natties.
No, yeah. Oh, come on. I mean, it's simple, right?
Like, no, you fortress and you let Dash come to you, and then you pounce on
bomb rush him.
But then you get disqualified for fortressing.
Well, you don't actually fortress. So
no, you let that one quad jumper go two forward, two back, while everything else just bumps.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think...
Or you just stay out of arc.
Well, it might not be...
Listen, Chris, but not everyone's running Soon Tier Whisper.
Yeah, it's a classic problem.
I think while it might be relatively easy for Dash to get his shots off, it's much harder for Dash to avoid being shot and killed.
Right, so what that was one of the things we were talking about this. So with Rourke, he's getting tactical officer and squad leader. So he can give Dash that perceptive co-pilot double focus. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, so you're still rolling average dice, like maybe three hits with the focus, four if you're really lucky. But Dash might need to do that barrel roll still if he ends up on a rock or if he's in a very inopportune spot. And then you're just dealing with average dice. Like, granted, you still have the focuses, but it's the Dash that was back in 1.0. He doesn't have those rerolls that he needs from Lone Wolf anymore and stuff like that. So it is still possible to kill this Dash. He's going to hurt like a bitch when he is shooting at you, but the more shots you can take on him, the better.
I think this is a list more than anything else that people want to be good.
Yeah.
Like, that's my impression of it. Like, this is, like, there's so much that can deal with it. It maybe will become kind of like a gate check list for some things. But it's sort of, in my mind, it's sort of the classic issue of it can joust fairly well because it shoots twice and deletes something and then doesn't take as much damage in return, potentially, against a three-ship list.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's not like... If you end up just kind of rolling directly into its trick, right, it's sort of similar to just kind of ending up in front of an entire barrage bomber swarm, right? Like, it's one-dimensional in that respect, where this list doesn't have the defensive capabilities outside of the Alpha Strike that some more balanced lists do, right? I mean, it does have that sort of built-in fact that Dash can go to a spot that most things maybe wouldn't, and just be out of arc and still shoot by kiting. But I don't think it's at the defensive kind of level that's necessary to be sustainable in our current meta.
Right.
Either because through mobility or through token stacking, right? It's still an Alpha Strike.
Yeah, it has some of the benefits of old school Dash, but it has all of the offensive benefits of old school Dash, but none of the defensive benefits. Like, you don't have Lone Wolf working for you. Your arc dodging is way worse. It's way easier to get boxed in and targeted by multiple ships with like very few defensive modifications if you're spending all your tokens to modify your dice on those 2 I-7 attacks. Like, you're right. Like, he will die.
Right.
And really, if it does become popular, I think it's just simply because people are looking for this type of playstyle. They're hungry for it.
Oh, yep. Sure. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Let's move on so we can close out this episode. So obviously we're all going to be at PAX this weekend. We have some promo cards to give away. They've been floating around for a little bit now, but we're going to give out the big brunt of it. We, all four of us, are going to have our signature IG-88 cards. Each of us is going to have a different one. Now, I know you're probably going to say, like, I don't know what you look like, so how am I going to find you? We should all have... our Liberty Squadron shirts on. If you go up to someone that has a Liberty Squadron shirt on and they don't have a card, they can probably point you in the right direction. So come introduce yourself. Tell us your favorite prequel meme or something. Or I tell you what, if you're flying against one of these dashes and you scream, "Fight me, you coward," then I will give you the full set. Or like, "Joust me, you coward." Say it as hot, like, loudly as you can. I will stop my game and run over your table and throw you a set of cards.
Or if you destroy Rourke and then shout about you, how you have the high ground.
Oh, yes. Yes. So we're putting bounties on this. Yeah.
But do you?
you don't destroy Rourke first is the thing. But
if you can somehow manage to destroy
Rourke. Here's one thing about that.
I feel like you have the high ground.
If you are flying enough ships, you can absolutely separate Rourke from Dash. And that hurts Dash hard. But like I said, each of us is going to have a different IG card. I will post it wherever I post this episode, the picture of them. They're tremendously done.
They're so good.
Mark Moriarty over at Hangar 19, we commissioned him to do it, and they are fantastic. You're going to love them. I hope you get a good laugh out of them. And I hope you start flying some IG-88s because they're not that bad, but they're definitely an acquired taste. But yeah, definitely each one of us is going to have a different card, so come find us, introduce yourself. We're doing this for the community, and we love you guys. So get out there. And what else do we have? So any shout outs before we start to close out? I do want to mention, that if you are coming in from out of town, we do have two stores that are open on Thursday night that have open play for X-Wing. Top Deck Games is over in New Jersey. I know it's, you have to cross the bridge to get over there, but it's only maybe like 15, 20 minutes from Center City where the convention center is. You can easily hitch a ride, message me on Facebook, whatever, I'll take you over. But we usually have a good amount of players over there on Thursday nights, and we're all going to be practicing for PAX. And then if you're up north a little bit, we have Seventh Dimension Games up in Jenkintown. Take a look at them. Again, if you're up north, definitely check that out. I believe Chris, you'll be there tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, so either of those stores, if you want to get some final reps in or just, meet the Philadelphia community, come check us out. So any shout-outs before we close out?
Just a quick one. I mean, just a general shout-out to the Philly X-Wing community. I don't know if it's 2.0 related or just other things, but it feels like the whole community's kind of been revitalized with X-Wing in the past, 6 months or so. Yeah, like that tournament that we had at Red Caps was really very fun and had a great turnout. Shout out to everybody involved.
Oh yeah, shout out to Andrew for running that tournament.
Shout out to Marshall for winning that tournament. Not shout out to Jonathan who was not at that tournament. all right, Jonathan, you got anything?
No, not right now.
Okay, so again, come find us. Buy us a drink, there's tons of bars, lots of cheesesteaks.
We're gonna like on Friday night, I think we're gonna try to move somewhere and get plastered after Swiss.
After Dash vaporized us all off the table.
Yeah. I'm gonna go O2 after running into two Dash lists, and I'm gonna be drunk at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's my birthday. Come buy me a drink.
We gotta get the birthday cake.
That's right. Yeah. If you bump into us, maybe by Friday we'll have figured out what's going on. But we're gonna try to it's not official. We're not like setting space aside at a bar anywhere. But I think we're all gonna try to go somewhere close around the convention center.
Walking distance, yeah.
And just chill out, after the tournament. So,
all right, so not to cut you off, but if you beat Marshall a 150 point margin. So I'm not saying table because I know that's hard and he's a good player, but if you beat him with a 150 point margin, I will have a birthday cake you smash in his face.
Okay.
I know he's not agreeing to that, but we're going to do it anyway.
It's going to get
that's okay, motivation for Marshall to win this thing. Yeah. That's what it is.
Oh jeez.
All right. So I think that does it for this episode. We're not really going to smash cake in Marshall's face, but
I mean, I don't, whatever.
When you get to the bar, you can absolutely do it after he's had 10 drinks.
All right. That's cool.
All right, guys. I think that does it for this week's episode. Hope to see you this weekend, and I hope everyone has a ton of fun. So come say hello and have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
See ya.